Well, the culmination of our Livingston 200 year, the bicentennial of the birth of Dr. David Livingston, has come to an end. We have been able to travel all the way up to Livingston for this historic event. Now, many people have little patience for history and say, oh, you know, history is really boring and just a bunch of names, places, dead people, and dates and numbers, and I can't remember it all. What's the point? Because most of us had a bad experience at school with history, probably a boring history teacher, or worse, these cursed government textbooks, which are, they must be written by committees whose brief is, take the most exciting events in history, make them boring. Because most school textbooks are actually nothing but garbage propaganda put together by some incompetents who wreck and often suck the life out of, take the heart and the brains out of any event, and they kill the love of learning and love of history in many youngsters. And it's a shocking thing what goes on in average history school, history class, and history textbook. But history is important. History is his story. God is sovereign, and there's a lesson to be learnt in history. History tells us what has worked and what has not worked. And we need to develop the ability to recognize these lessons in every area of life. If we don't know our own history, we will simply have to endure all the same mistakes and sacrifices and absurdities all over again. Until we learn a lesson, we stay in that grade and we don't progress. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And, I mean, you can just see in recent history, Americans didn't seem to learn from Carter, and they elected Clinton, they didn't seem to learn from Clinton, and they elected Obama. They didn't seem to learn the first time, they did it again. So, I mean, that's just one example of how people can be unbelievably stupid, deaf, dumb, and blind, and just not get the message. So, okay, you can suffer the consequences. To be ignorant of what happened before you were born is to remain a child forever. Not to understand where we come from, generationally. It is not the remembered past, but the forgotten past that enslaves us. C.S. Lewis said, some people say we're enslaved by the past. Well, yes you are, if you don't know the past. But if you remember the past, then you liberate it to build on it and improve on it. The longer you look back, the further you can look forward. We don't look back into the past because we want to stay there. It's because we want to build a better present and a better future. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Now, these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things. So the Bible makes it clear that these things are written down for our instruction as examples. Some are good examples, a lot of bad examples. We can learn from everyone, some what to do and some what not to do. History is moving to a culmination. All nations will come and worship before Christ. The kingdoms of the world have become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And David Livingstone understood this. He had a vision of victory. He understood the eschatology of victory. He had a post-millennial hope. He had this Puritan hope. He was absolutely convinced that although he was the only preacher in the whole of the Zambezi Valley, in the whole of what today is known as Zambia and Zimbabwe and Malawi, he is the first one preaching the gospel, and there wasn't a single convert for years of labors. He knew one day there will be millions of Christians here, tens of thousands of churches, kings will bow down before Christ. He had absolute assurance of that. And so that's why at the Reformation Society we look back into history frequently to understand the past, to make a better future. And so this year we've had a number of great events looking at the extraordinary life and legacy of Dr. David Livingstone. He was born on the 19th of March, 1813, and he died on the 1st of May, 1873. So this year is the 200th anniversary of his birth. He came to Africa in 1841, arrived 17th of March in Cape Town, but he left England at December 1840. In fact, that's a picture of David Livingstone, or a portrait of him, when he is 27, as he left on board ship to come to South Africa. And after his second missionary journey, the Zambezi expedition. He came from the land of Scotland. And this year, Scotland's been having many great festivals and celebrations of their most favoured son, one of the greatest sons to ever come from Scotland. Countries like Malawi have organised special events because Malawi in particular owes its existence to David Livingstone's explorations and vision and the university's mission. So schools in England and schools in Malawi have been involved in joint celebrations and projects. The very church where we held this conference in Livingstone, the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church, had their own celebrations, of course, in March of this year. And you can go all over the world and find there's different exhibits at museums. Here at the David Livingstone Center in Blantyre, they had special events with the Foreign Affairs Minister and President of Malawi coming and meeting with the heads of Scotland. This tenement building, which looks very nice now, was once a very ugly, horrible tenement building with 24 families crammed into the place, and David Livingstone's family had the top corner at the end of the third floor. But now it's beautiful. It's got a fountain around a globe reminding us of the missionary vision, and a museum. The president of Malawi travelled to Scotland, to Blantyre, to the David Livingstone Centre in time to celebrate the birthday of David Livingstone, 19th of March this year. And here, Malawi's foreign minister meeting. Notice the Scottish flag and the Malawi flag joined together on his lapel. And at many different churches in Scotland, they have been honouring David Livingstone this year. Here you can see under a Scottish flag type umbrella, because the weather over there is not quite as good as and sunny as Malawi's. Scotland welcoming Malawi's president, who, by the way, one of the first acts she did when she became president was to sell the presidential jet so that I can travel on normal planes. Thank you. Interesting indeed. This is the church in Hamilton. This congregational church, or the Free Church of Hamilton, is where the Livingstone family walked to from Blantyre, and so they had their celebrations, particularly March of this year, at the 200th anniversary of the birth of Dr. David Livingstone. And this is the front of the church in Hamilton. So these are just some of the places where they've had memorials. Of course, at Westminster Abbey, at Livingstone's tomb, there was wreath laying and memorial services earlier this year, particularly on the 1st of May, which is the anniversary of his death. Many people may have missed it, but at every one of the weddings, the great weddings of the royals, whether we're talking about Princess Diana or Catherine earlier on in 2011, as they walk in, if you've seen the film footage, walk into Westminster Abbey, there's this is at the very entrance and always surrounded by pot plants at that time of the weddings, with the red carpets running around it. And so they must stop in front and then come to one side. There's no more important, more prominent spot in the whole of Westminster Abbey, the greatest cathedral in Britain, than David Livingstone's tomb. He has the place of honour. Well, my vision for the Livingstone 200 idea was a Victoria Falls Livingstone safari. We would get foreigners from Scotland and America and wherever else where they are interested to come out and have a holiday investing in the economy of Scotland, of Zambia, and hopefully people would be thrilled to come and go on the Zambezi River and visit the memorials for David Livingstone. And there's these hotel suites right on the Zambezi and literally within sight of Victoria Falls. And so if we could just get 10 people to go, you'd get one free ticket and room. If you get 20 to go, you get two, and so on. Well, I mean, how difficult would it be to get 20 or 30 couples to come out on an event like this, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? And I thought, considering the amount of people that jet off to Israel all the time and go on these religious tourism things, I thought this was a surefire, how can you lose? There's got to be people who've got missionary interest, historical interest, and would love to come to Africa. And it doesn't get any more luxurious than this. You know, a safari in the town of Livingstone, right on the banks of Zambezi, at Victoria Falls, surely there's going to be standing room only, the people are going to flood for this. Well, that didn't happen. And my idea of the people doing their kinds of... We would take them on guided tours in the mornings and afternoons. They could do special events like riding on elephants or bungee jumping off Victoria Falls Bridge or going on microlights around and so on, game viewing, whatever. And in the evenings, we'd have presentations. And while the people were doing their afternoon game drives or bungee jumpings, I'd be lecturing at the parallel program for the Zambians. Well, as it so happens, the parallel program became the only program. Because while we had a lot of people interested, no one was willing to come for several reasons. So one thing is they reported, many people said, it costs more to fly to Livingston for 5 days than to fly to Israel for 2 weeks. Why? Why is it that to fly from Cape Town to Livingston is more expensive than to fly from Cape Town to Tel Aviv for a turn, and you could stay in 5 hotels in Israel for 2 weeks? Well, the first thing you could answer is, well, Israel isn't run on an economic basis. Israel gets billions and billions of euros from Germany and billions of dollars from America every year, and so they don't have to be economical. They can subsidize everything. And Israel flies in huge amounts of journalists and travel agents and gives them a wining and dining experience, as happened to our people at Joy magazine, and they got the full treatment. And so they come back and wow, and Israel provides all of the resources to encourage tourism, which is an intelligent thing for a country to do. However, Zambia does the opposite. Zambia is one of the most expensive countries in Africa to travel to. Michael said of all the places he travels through Africa, 12 countries, Zambia is the most expensive for the border and for fuel. Well, I found it's more expensive to fly from Johannesburg to Livingston than from Cape Town to Tel Aviv. Johannesburg to Livingston, that's barely an hour and a half's flight. It's shocking because South African Airways and Zambian Air have made a monopoly agreement that makes it cripplingly expensive to fly there because they've got a monopoly. So literally, you can fly to Europe cheaper than you can fly to Livingston. So that was the first thing that killed a lot of it. Then the other thing is the rates and taxes on the hotels in Zambia is crippling. And of course, there's visa fees and American passport rubbing hands with glee. I saw them standing at the airport there, you know, every American walking in just giving them a $50 bill just for entry. They were very disappointed to see my South African passport because those from the SADC regions don't pay a visa fee there. But they certainly seek to fleece the foreigners.
Yeah, sure.
So our parallel program was, okay, the Livingston 200 Missions Conference, which is make your own hotel arrangements, your own camping arrangements, stay in a tent for a week here, but which is what we're going to do. We'll put on the conference, no charge for the conference, but you make your own way there. And that's the one that actually happened. So David and John went up and did the prep, and they prepared the way and organized no end of church and other meetings. And from this side, Michael and Renee and Taryn and John drove up. That's the crazy team. En route from Livingston House, up through Namibia, and over some fun territory to get up through to... Now, this is more proof of evolution. You can see that randomly, over millions of years, these rocks have just appeared in these lines. This is this no intelligent design, nobody placed them there. They're just, it just evolved like that, you know. Correct? I mean, when you see rocks like that, you assume it just happened by chance, don't you? Exactly. I mean, there's no way that could be. Now, that's not as intricate as an eye or as a flower, but nobody's going to believe that happened by accident. But they believe that the human eye evolved. And if we think that the human eye is impressive, that's nothing compared to an eagle's eye. An eagle can see 8 to 12 times better than you and I can. So, it requires a leap of faith. As an evolutionist, you just have to take a leap, and you just got to believe that these things just happen by chance. And on the way up, our team got to see some magnificent wildlife. This is the Tosha Pan Game Reserve. one of the oldest game reserves in the world. Kaiser Wilhelm II declared this. It was the largest game reserve in the world at one time, more than four times its present size when it was first declared back in the 19th century. This would have been...
This is Halali.
Halali campsite. And at Okakuyu.
This is also Halali.
Ah. What a great water. I mean, imagine that. You can sit within the campsite and you can literally see the wildlife come to you.
Okakuyu.
That's Okakuyu. I remember having some great times at these game parks. I wasn't part of this particular one. These are Michael and Renee's pictures, and John was the brine master, it seems. And that was the accommodations. And at night, the rhino, and they had a bit of a drama playing out here as some lions are trying to come to the water hole, and apparently the rhino's in a bad mood and trying to keep them all away. But in this magnificent wilderness, there's an absolute paradise of wildlife. We got to feel how the springbok felt a bit later on the Livingstone 200 celebration service at Victoria Falls. We were also looking for shade under thorn trees that had no leaves. It makes a big difference on hot days like that. Now, magnificent animals. Rain. Zambia was the center, and when you get to Livingstone, you know, even if you can't read the name Livingstone, you can see who they're named after. Plainly, the town of Livingstone honors and reveres the memory of Dr. David Livingstone. This is a memorial that was established on the centenary of the discovery of Victoria Falls. This is in the center of Livingstone, and it says, on the 16th of November, 1855, the falls of Musiotani were discovered by Dr. David Livingstone, renamed by him the Victoria Falls, and he is the first European to set foot here and to produce accurate descriptions and maps of this part of Africa. And interesting that this is the exact same date that in the Rhodesian side, this is on the northern Rhodesia side, on the southern Rhodesia side, they were erecting the more famous statue of David Livingstone, which is more iconic. But that was on the same centenary. So we were gathering together particularly for the 16th of November. So here we are at the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church, and this is the kitchen, and you can see Rene, being the catering person, managed to cope with less than ideal circumstances for being able to, and by the way, the water didn't always run. Frequently there was no water in the tap at all. So they just had to be prepared. And so catering here, you can see from the bars, some people believe in the principles of scientific socialism and secular humanism, that they can take whatever's yours. And so notice the incredible burglar bars on the doors of the church and the windows, of course. This is the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church, which was our venue for the Livingstone 200 Missions Conference, and we organized this Livingstone 200 Missions Manual, which is packed full of great materials. And it was, while it wasn't the ideal circumstance for catering purposes for Rene, this was a nice venue, at least for the meetings. It was on Musiotani Road, which is very central. It's the main artery running through town. These displays were all done by the Frew girls, by especially Michelle Frew. David Frew's daughters were involved in putting this together and decorating the hall on all sides with the various Livingstone memorabilia. So these are homeschool projects up at Petersburg with the Frew family. And so this literature table was very well enthusiastically supported, and a lot of good materials sold and distributed from it. This was the dispensing of liquids, and let us say, you're always thirsty in that kind of heat. It was very hot. It's hard to imagine hot when you're in Cape Town, but this is seriously hot. The water needed to be continually filtered because the purification system and the water in the government's plumbing is not adequate. So I think every day, depending on how much was available plumbing-wise, Renault was filling our water purifier, getting it through, and seeing that we had juice, water, tea, and so on. It's kept the people hydrated. Tessa Frew, David Frew's very busy and accomplished wife who manages to cope with six children. And this is the first time that I've been on a mission trip with David where his wife's been able to join him, which is a real treat. And so, while I was still flying up from Cape Town, the rest of the team had opened up the Livingston 200 Missions Conference in Livingston and teaching the people great hymns of the faith. Most of the people were only used to choruses, and some said first time they've ever sung a hymn. And these banners were specially made by the Presbyterian Church in honor of the Livingston Bicentenary. This is the first I saw of Zambia as I flew in. Unfortunately, I wasn't on the left-hand side of the plane, so I didn't get to see the falls. But you can see the Zambezi, even in dry season. Pretty impressive. Substantial. By the way, these islands are named after different English princesses. There's Princess Alexandria and Princess Elizabeth Island, and so no end of different islands named after the royal family. But the most famous of all islands, of course, is Livingston Island, which we'll show a bit later. So that's the first I saw. And when I got out the airport, what did I see? A brand new monument to David Livingston and to his faithful followers, Susie and Chuma. They're still building monuments to David Livingston to this day. And what a privilege to be at this most historic time and place. And that my first activity was to take the group on a guided tour of the Victoria Falls. And we're right by the border, so you see the customs officials checking out all of the trucks coming around, and there's no end of inspections being taking place over here. In fact, we saw that the baboons there are extremely active. And at this, what they now call a World Heritage Site, we immediately saw how socialism works. Zambians, 7 kwacha, children, residents, 350, non-residents, 100 kwacha, children, non-residents, 50. So from 7 kwacha to 100 kwacha, that's the difference between being a foreigner and being a local.
What do they term by filming?
I hope it means a professional filming, because that's pretty unreasonable. By the way, they've just knocked lots and lots of zeros off, so 7 kwacha equals 14 rand. So it's 2 rand to 1 kwacha. They've moved it all the way back to the original, like what it would have been with the British pound at independence. Of course, it's not. They've just knocked all the zeros off, so it looks less than it actually is. You're now in a World Heritage Site, they say. And notice, you're not... they're not liable for any loss, damage, injury, death. Apparently, people fall off the falls and die there and drown and all that regularly, but it's bad for tourism, so nobody says a word about it. So, you've been warned. And we met local ZANU PF community organizers on the way. Notice how these little ones get a chance to just take a ride with mom on the back. And they're very organized. They know how to operate basic equipment, not only how to strip the trees of any kind of fruit, but they know how to handle hose pipes and water. You can see this chap knew exactly what to do and how to operate also. The only thing they don't do is they don't switch off the tap afterwards. Now, you can see what a wreckage they make of all the plants. So, for this reason, there's a whole lot of places where they have these protection fences put around to be able to enable some plants to grow. But the baboons have worked out how to rip those apart and turn them over too. So that doesn't necessarily work also. David's vehicle is faithful Land Rover, which he's driven up from Limpopo on many a mission. They've now centralized and organized the informal traders that used to be all over the place here in these little shops. If you go there, they're willing to trade, and some of them would even say, do you have a Bible? I'll trade you a Bible for some of the curios. And they're selling Zimbabwe $1 million and $1 billion notes there too. $1 trillion. So that's quite clever. Selling something that's worthless and getting something for it, that's ingenuity. As for tourism, I mean, it's a novelty. This statue of David Livingston was set up in 2005 on the 150th anniversary of the founding of Victoria Falls by Dr. David Livingston. So, obviously an important photo op for some of the people who are with us. To give you the feel of it, here's the falls, a mile wide, and on the Zambian side, we're going to walk up here along Knife Edge to what they call Danger Point. This would be the border post, and there's the bridge, so-called Victoria Falls Bridge, and then here's the Zimbabwe side. This is the Devil's Cataract, Cataract Island, Main Falls, Livingston Island, Horseshoe Falls, Armchair Falls, Rainbow Falls, Eastern Cataract. That's the way it should be, theoretically. Assuming everything's operating the way it should. So that just gives you an overview. So here you can see, we're going to walk out to Knife Edge Bridge to Danger Point. There's the highest bungee jumping in the world, Victoria Falls Bridge. And Eastern Cataract, this is the way it would look if it's in full flood. Rainbow Falls, Armchair Falls, Horseshoe Falls, Livingston Island, Main Falls, Cataract Island, Devil's Cataract, and Livingston statues, roughly on that side. And we, on this side, the Livingston statue on the Zambian side is over there. You can see that there's vegetation that's flourishing because of the falls, and yet this is what we saw on the Eastern Cataract side. Dry as a bone, because this is quite spectacular to see it, because normally in full flood, which I've only seen it in full flood before, you wouldn't see a thing except mist, and then occasionally a little bit of vast amounts of water, and then the mist covers again. But notice as you look here, there's some trees that survive. Every year millions of gallons of water pouring past it. Their roots must be deeply anchored into the rock to stand firm. I mean, obviously most trees, they just get washed over the side. But some have survived. So, in fact, going in dry season, you get to see something of the falls, something of the spectacularness of it, which you wouldn't see when all the water's covering the gorge. So it's nice to see it in full flood, but it's also very impressive to see it before the full flood. This would be part of the Eastern Cataract. This is the Zambian side. And even now, in the dry season, the rains hadn't started yet, it still had a fair bit. And here you can see what you might call Victoria's trickles, but it's still quite an impressive falls when you get there. You can see on the Zimbabwe side, at Main Falls, there's always water coming. But the Zambian side, only in full flood will it go all the way along. Knife Edge and heading Danger Point, and that's the bridge.
I've never seen that bridge before. Is it new, or has it been there?
Oh, you're talking about on the Zambian side, this one?
Yeah, that bridge. Yeah.
This little bridge. This was built in 1968 on the Zambian side. Yeah. And this is quite impressive. If you look down there, you can see some people swimming there. Now, Taryn can tell you exactly how much it costs to swim there, but we worked out it just quite a lot. Unfortunately, somebody's really... Because we looked at this and thought, oh, that would be great. We are so hot. But you can see.
$70 per person for 2 hours.
And of course, what I don't know is how they get you there. I couldn't see.
Do they guarantee no crocodiles?
No. but all the people, if you look carefully, they're all wearing life vests. And they have to, because the water is so aerated from the pounding down that you can just sink. You don't float to the top like you might normally. In a waterfall thing, it's so much air, you just go straight down. It is wise to have life vest on in a situation like that. So, okay, you're looking towards Zimbabwe, there's still a Zambian side, but that gives you a bit of a feel. So here we are, Knife Edge Bridge, built 1968, 40 meters. And it's quite impressive. On the Zambian side, they actually have proper barriers. The Zimbabwean side's not so concerned. If you fall off, they just put some thorn bushes or something. but not totally. In some parts, you can just wander off the edge and never be heard of again. So here's where some of the people are swimming down there. You could see them on the side. That's on that boiling hot stifling day. That looked like a really good idea. Now you can see the water pouring in from the other side, from the Zimbabwe side. This is incredible. How did this happen? You know, when you look at this, of course, what's an evolutionist going to say? He's going to say billions of years, but we're going to say flood. This has been made probably very quickly in a time of great flood, but very impressive. And again, you see these trees that have survived how many years of flooding coming over it. So it's just another reminder that you need to have your roots deep down, anchored in the rock. So looking towards Zimbabwe side, this is the end of knife edge and danger point. This is about as far as you can go on the Zambian side. And now you're looking just towards Zimbabwe side. That gives you a bit of a feel of how spectacular. I imagine when all that water's coming over, you wouldn't see any of it because the mist is so complete. And if you brought out your camera, it would get soaked. You'd get a lot of bubbles. So, in fact, while it's great to see it in the rainy season, this was well worth a visit too. Interesting, this rare species was named after Dr. John Kirk, who was the medical doctor on the Zambezi expedition with David Livingstone. And now looking towards Zimbabwe side, notice Zimbabwe side doesn't seem to have much in the way of barriers on the end. And now, if you look at Victoria Falls Bridge, the highest bungee jumping in the world, they say, you can actually see...
The highest bungee is here in South Africa.
Yeah.
Do we have higher? They say this is 360 feet. Is that higher? Well, then they're doing false advertising over there because they claim it's the highest bungee jumping in the world, they claim. But here you can see somebody just coming up from one of those jumps and going down again.
360 feet is just over 100 metres.
Yes, over 100
metres. Crown's bungee is 216
metres. Metres? Wow. Okay, well, these chaps have got out the claim that they're the highest. Now, you'll see the spider coming down the side, kind of, while this person's still managing on the end of their bungee. But that's the one who's going to help hoist them up, apparently. So they're coming down on some winch. And then they get wheeled up. They can see somebody else going down. Apparently, there was somebody...
yes, in 2012, that actually it snapped. Her, she survived.
It actually, she was snapped. Badly mangled, yeah. but yes, the bungee did snap. They don't talk about those sort of things over there. that is not good for tourism.
I think they were happy that they did news, I'm sure.
But she did survive, amazingly. Amazing. But that's the difference between bungee jumping over water and not.
Yes.
I think if you bungee jump at all over water would make sense. Notice how high they come back up again. There's a war memorial. This is tragic. All over the British world you've got these monuments to people who died in the First World War. Now, next year, 2014, will be the 100th anniversary of the outbreak of World War I. And we must look at this, the worst event in the history of civilization. This is what reversed the Great Ascension of Missions, and absolutely tragic. In the most remote parts of the world, there are monuments like this to people who thought that they were fighting for something worthwhile. But when you discover the wickedness of these banksters behind the scenes who are just pulling the strings, the Illuminati Freemason bunch, and how they got Christian nations to wipe one another out in spectacular numbers. Well, Falls FM, although it's a secular radio, invited us on three times, and different ones of us had long times, and almost an hour at a time, of being able to communicate to people. This is on a secular radio station. The one thing we noticed in Zambia is the Zambian secular media are much more open to gospel than our Christian media often are. They had no limits on what you could say. Now, this is the Murrumba River, which runs as a tributary to the Zambezi. So this is the view close to our campsite where Michael and David said was the best place for us to be. So this is Frontline Fellowship's temporary base up in Murrumba River Lodge, and that was my tent and my home for this time. Not exactly what I first envisaged when we were talking about the Livingston Safari, but it was fun and comfortable. And that's the trailer tent that unfolds out of the trailer that Michael and Renee pulled on the back of this vehicle. And you can see even the electricity cord going through, and people able to do quite a lot when the electricity worked. There were power failures, of course. Of course. And this little one there was for John, and that palace there was for Taryn. And Bruce had one on the other side.
You guys did all right. You were comfortable.
It's not bad at all. Yeah, as camping goes, it's pretty good. Yeah. Now, notice this tree over here. This is the table where we attempt to have breakfast and all of that. But, of course, the biggest reality up in these parts of Africa, especially in Zambezi River, is the mosquito. And David Livingstone said the mosquito and the tsetse fly are the two biggest obstacles to opening up Africa for the gospel. Mosquitoes kill about 2 million people a year through malaria in Africa alone. 2 million a year. And yet there were, malaria was effectively eradicated by 1960. The colonials had wiped out cholera, malaria, diphtheria, black water fever, and just about everything else. And in the progress that's come since 1960, we've had a regression to all these diseases that had once been wiped out. Well, you don't want the sun to go down without putting on lots and lots of tabard and other anti-insect protections. The camping, cooking, brying fun at night is quite good. And while we were sitting there, I was saying, so have you seen any cats around here? And I was being told, no, don't be silly. This is a wildlife preserve. There's hippos and so on around here. Of course, there's no cats here. And our team had camped there quite a few times, apparently. So you can see some of the team. And along came this orange cat. And it doesn't matter where I'm in the world, cats find me. And so we called him Livingston. He joined in and he came and didn't miss much. And very nice cat. And he looked well cared for. He's obviously just adopted this campsite. And he's obviously doing quite well for himself. Now they've got these signs all over, beware of hippos. And there's good reason. Because at night you could hear them. You could hear them bellowing and munching and crunching and coming along. And their, you know, stomachs rumbling. And they're out there. But sometimes you just about walk into them. And on a few nights, I had great trouble getting my camera to focus because it was so dark. I needed to learn how to get it on manual at that moment. But you can get an idea. Yes. They were close. This is a hippo here too. And they're big. When you see them up close, it's quite extraordinary. But of course, it's a dry season. They've just got dry grass out there. We're in a campsite where they've got irrigation, and obviously they're going to come for the green grass. So every night the hippos would come and munch nicely, and there's hippo during the day in the Murrumba River tributary to the Zambezi. Happy hippos. The tree that we were having our breakfast by had this interesting little tree snake, cute little thing, stick his head out. And I got a few of these sort of pictures, but then Michael got his ones where he's slithering out. But notice how amazing that he manages to stay on this tree. What is this chap holding on? Isn't that just extraordinary, the balance, dexterity of these creatures? So, very amazing, all of these magnificent creatures. So, here we're at the David Livingstone Memorial Presbyterian Church, having each morning lectures, presentations on different aspects of the life and legacy of David Livingstone, his vision, his eschatology, strategy and interesting discussion times. Many of the people expressed to us how they'd been told, you know, really a lot of propaganda and schools, and were very appreciative of hearing what actually was going on. When it came to discussing the essence of evangelism, there's quite a lot of misunderstandings and appreciation of good teaching. The Zambians are very appreciative of good teaching. At the local Christian school that belongs to this Presbyterian church, Taryn did a anti-trafficking presentation. She asked those who would like to get free education overseas in America, no cost, all expenses paid, and of course they line up to come over, and when they did, she put these chains on them and said, "You've just been trafficked." When you hear free, no experience required, all expenses paid, you must know it's too good to be true. It is too good to be true. This is classic trafficking. And so that's all you need is, you know, and to suddenly learn it's a lie. There is no free, no experience required, all expenses paid overseas, etc. This is how people end up in the human slave trade of today. And so through this illustration, she started to teach him about the principles of how you can resist and not follow all these lies of them. These nice, real metal chains and shackles were made by David Frew for this conference, and Taryn managed to liberate them and bring them back here for her anti-trafficking presentations at schools here. It's so much more effective when you suddenly feel this clonk, these really heavy chains.
Did you see the expressions on that girl's face?
Yes, indeed. I mean, the shock, she was really shocked when she learned that, no, this is not true, and this is how you get trafficked. So, here they are rushing for the literature and all. Literature distribution in Africa is easy. This is the Livingston Museum. When it was established in 1950, it was called the Rhodes Livingston Museum. I don't mind that they've dropped the name Rhodes, because he's not worthy to be put in the same sentence as David Livingston. We found the clock was always wrong. It's been a long time since they've had that clock right. And another of many statues of David Livingston around Livingston. And David Livingston is always depicted in Zambia with a Bible in his hand. It's, and often you can read on it, Holy Bible, as is written right here. So the Livingston Museum has got, you can see an advert for our conference on the notice board there. The Livingston Museum has got a lot of natural history, evolutionary propaganda and so on, but they've got a wing just dealing with Dr. David Livingston as well. Chitumbo's village, where Dr. David Livingston was, where's Harper's buried, where he died on his knees praying. And so there's a lot of interesting natural history presentations. One thing that's as interesting here is how they say Victoria Falls was, nobody came near Victoria Falls. This is an own museum set up by Kenneth Kaunda's people. Nobody went near it because of their fear of Nyami Nyami, the river god. In fact, I remembered at Victoria Falls, when the Rhodesians built Kariba Dam, there was such an outcry from the people that this is going to upset Nyami Nyami, the river god. In fact, one of the classic books on Rhodesian wars called The River Goddess. Because the terrorists started their campaign to agitate the people against the Rhodesian government over Kariba Dam building, saying, this is covering your ancestral lands in water and burying some of the graves of your ancestors underwater, and they're going to be furious with you. And the river goddess, Nyami Nyami, is going to come and is going to judge you for this. And so this is the first recruitment tool of the Commissars, was Nyami Nyami and Kariba Dam's story. Well, the Rhodesians went so far as to build a monument to Nyami Nyami. If you go to Kariba Dam walls, there's a serpent statue coiled up there, and that it says this is Nyami Nyami, the river goddess, and this is meant to appease her about the fact that it just built Kariba Dam. Bizarre. But in Victoria Falls, they admitted that. Well, the David Livingston Gallery. This is actually a treasure trove of interesting artifacts. Of course, a lot of Livingston's memorabilia went back to Scotland and is in David Livingston Centre in Blantyre. But here you've got a lot of his family tree in his early years and about the Moffat family. And there's a lot of intriguing on the family tree of the Livingstons. Taryn was fascinated to see that a section of the Livingston family became Hodgson's, which she was not aware of. There's a lot of his actual correspondence there too. Somebody's mapped out where he walked. Yeah, here's Orange River, here's Limpopo, here's Zimbezi. And David Livingston walked. Started off in what is today Port Elizabeth, walked up to Kuruman, all the way across South Africa, across Botswana, across Namibia, across Zambia, Angola, across Angola, Zambia, Zimbabwe, to Mozambique, to the Indian Ocean, later on up through Mozambique, Malawi, and all around here. Even went back to Victoria Falls again, when Thomas Baines got his famous portrait, and walked back again. That was just to take his porters back to their village. And later on, all around Tanzania and the Congo. Extraordinary, the distances he walked. Well, they've got some really good, interesting, fascinating materials on the different expeditions. One of his rifles, one of his pistols, his umbrella. Hard to believe he carried an umbrella in Africa, but that must have been in Europe. He actually also had a six-barreled revolver and a double-barreled rifle, but those are up in Scotland. These are just some of the materials that you can see, including a cast of his humerus bone that was broken in that fight with the lion. And as you go through here, they've also got a lot of his correspondence, a lot of the material. Now, you'll notice in this portrait, it shows Livingston with his rifle on the ground when the lion took him down, because after all, he did shoot the lion first. But in Scotland, they don't mention that. They've just got, in the statue, it's just Livingston on his own being attacked by a lion, no rifles in the statue, which isn't honest. It's really bad propaganda against lions to suggest that lions would attack a person who's minding his own business. In 26 years walking across Africa, David Livingston was never attacked by a lion on any other occasion than when he first shot the lion, which proves the point. You leave the lion alone, he'll leave you alone. No lion ever attacked Henry Morton Stanley either, so just leave him alone.
There was enough white blood around then.
No, there was, sure. Lots and lots. So here they've got interesting pictures and portrayals and recreations and about his various family members and the Moffat family. And it's really a treasure trove. You can spend a lot of good time going through them. Interesting pictures of the slave trade that he was fighting against, his effects that were brought back. Outside the Livingston Museum, we've got this monument. Some of his tools that he used, scientific instruments, sextant, quadrant, thermometers, and about the final journey. And so David Livingston died in Zambia. And so Zambia's very much linked to the memory of David Livingston. Again, more details about his faithful followers, many of whom he had rescued from slavery. His coat, it's hard to believe he wouldn't need this in Africa, but I'm sure he wouldn't need that in Scotland. But how cold can it possibly get walking across the Zambezi?
Very cold. I've been there. Mm-hmm. Temperature can drop so low at night on that Zambezi.
Low enough to need that?
Yes.
Wow.
Very much so.
Well, it was hard for us to imagine. We were just pouring in sweat. So, while this was going on, David rushed in and told me that the mayor wanted me to do an interview on the radio to explain all this, and so they sent a film crew through to Livingston Museum so that we could have an interview there. These are just some of the correspondence of David Livingston that you can see. It's interesting how they, with many of these letters, they start out quite big handwriting, early days in the field. But as you get on, his handwriting gets smaller and smaller because he's running out of paper. And you can see how this is obviously early on, and then later on it gets very, very tiny because paper's so short. So this film crew came along and did an interview, which was broadcast in order to promote the importance of Livingston's bicentennial. And these are two of our evangelists who've come down and been part of the Great Commission course. Joel and Ruben both work in Eastern Province very effectively, and they've organized many great ministry opportunities for frontline teams. Some of the other co-workers and friends and delegates. So we, of course, did a lot of warning about the false gospels and laying good foundations, way of the master, evangelism workshop, Ten Commandments-based evangelism, role-playing, teaching folks how to engage in good one-on-one person evangelism, and training them, and then getting on the streets for some outreaches. To run a service at Victoria Falls, we realized we'd need some chairs. The church was happy to lend us chairs. We were the only transport, and Paul Hamelrock here, he's an American missionary based in Kabwe, who came and joined in with the conference. So his vehicle also helped with transporting, because we had to get a lot of chairs over to Victoria Falls. They didn't tend to have those sort of things for us to rent. So, with these straps on the top, and trusting in good weather, well, we certainly didn't need to worry about rain. It was hot. I just love the way how you've got the sign of danger, don't go beyond this point. A little bit of bush there. If you did go beyond that point, you would fall a long way. But that didn't stop Livingston. I don't know if they had the sign then, though. He actually crawled to the end. So the reason why we were gathering on the 16th of November was because on the 16th of November, 1855, David Livingston took his canoe to the edge of the falls to land on what's today called Livingston Island, and he crawled to the edge and he let down a weighted with lead rope and he measured off 310 feet. And that's exactly the distance from the height from Livingston Island to the bottom. Now, in other parts, it can be as much as 360 feet, but and he measured at different points too to find out where was the longest, and he paced it out. He must have used rope because his measurements are exact. 1,860 yards across, he said. This is Devil's Cataract. That's Cataract Island going on to Main Falls. And back in 1971, just before I went to Victoria Falls for the first time in my life, I remember when I got there, the people talking quite excitedly about an entire American film crew went over Devil's Cataract. They were filming something there and they just got too close to the end, and the entire film crew, producer, director, cameraman, they must have got some great footage on the way down.
Has anybody seen it?
Nope. That was it. So, you can imagine, I was quite impressed about that. This is in Livingston's Travels, showing you not only the falls, but the gorges. This gives you a bit of an idea. This is the first sketch given to give you a bit of a perspective. This is Eastern Cataract from the Zambian side. And when it's in full flood, it's hard to even get this kind of picture because the mist is so great. So pull out your camera and take a quick pick and take it down. During dry season from the Zimbabwe side, there's always something of a rainbow. You can see plainly from the Zimbabwe side. Here's from the Zambian side again. Knife point, danger point. This is Zambia, that's Zimbabwe. And imagine pacing out or extending with, he must have used rope and then marked it off 1,860 yards wide, which our GPSs and satellite technology can't improve on. So he was meticulous, and here's his original sketchings. And you can see here, Victoria Falls, 1,860 yards. This from his diary. That's the first day. 310 feet deep. And he paces, the 150 paces from here, and 400 feet deep at this point. And people have gone through it. And even though he is there on the 16th of November, which this year was not very wet at all, it was obviously wet at that time. That's how he mapped it. So there was obviously more rainfall at that particular time. on that particular year.
You think too that he probably had a length of rope that was a certain length.
Mm. Yeah.
He didn't have a complete length of rope to cover that whole distance.
No, he would have had to do it in sections, obviously. Yeah. I mean, who carries a mile wide rope? But he obviously had one that's over 360 feet because he was able to check that out. Just absolutely amazing. Now, when he came back a few years later with Thomas Baines, the famous Victorian artist who was part of the so-called dream team for the Zambezi expedition, they walked up here, and Baines then painted this scene, and you could see phenomenal wildlife and vegetation. And this was the point. Nobody hunted there. All the wildlife congregated there because the local people were terrified of Nyami Nyami, the river goddess. They were terrified of the smoke that thunders. So while some people want to ridicule, how could David Livingstone have discovered Victoria Falls? Everybody there must have known about it. Well, they knew something was there. But when he said, "What's that?" They said, "Musi Oetanya, the smoke that thunders." What makes the smoke thunder? The devil. Nobody was explaining it was a waterfall. They didn't know. Nobody wanted to go near there. They were superstitious. It was a time of witchcraft and fear of the witch doctor. Who was going to try and go near the thunderous noise? And so the wildlife congregated around there, and there was phenomenal herds, which shows people weren't hunting there.
I see that. I've got a picture in the drawing there, the guy there.
Yes, now this is years after Livingstone had found it. This is now in 1858, so he, 3 years after he so-called discovered Victoria Falls, he came back with Thomas Baines on the Zambezi expedition. And so by that stage, it would have started to be encroached on because some of the mystique's been taken away from it. But yes, on this occasion, the way Thomas Baines has depicted it, you see a hunter there now. But originally, when Livingstone first went there, he might have been the first human I see it, or maybe not the very first in history, but certainly of his generation. It's not likely that he certainly is the first person to make it known to the world, to name it, to map it. And so from the Zimbabwe side, you can see here, that's Devil's Cataract, there's Main Falls. And this gives you a bird's eye view. Okay, during the rainy season, so that's where the tourists would have been, the Royal Livingstone, if I'd had my way. And here you can see all the way along, that is Livingstone Island. So he brought his canoe down. Good thing he stopped on the island. Otherwise, that would have been lost. We would have heard of him. He crawled to the end and he let down his rope from there. So that's now called Livingstone Island. That's Cataract Island. So that is Devil's Cataract. This is Cataract Island, here's Main Falls, that's always in, something's coming over there. Livingstone Island, and then you've got Horseshoe, Rainbow, Eastern Cataract, Knife Edge, that gives you an idea. And it is spectacular. In full flood, you're talking about millions of litres coming over every minute. Millions. It's tons and tons. If you got washed over, you'd not only drown and then you'd get pounded. I mean, you're talking about tons of water coming down every second. Victoria Falls Bridge. Cecil Rhodes said he wanted the bridge built so that as the people crossed it on the Cape to Cairo railway line, that the mist and spray of the Victoria Falls would be washing over the railway line as it goes across. Everything of this bridge was built in Britain and shipped out here and assembled and fit. How did they even measure it to get the measurements right at that kind of distance? But they did. And this is Eastern Falls, Zambian side. You can always see it Zambian side by the wooden barrier. You see just now that they don't quite have the same barriers as the Zimbabwe side. And some people are a little more reckless than others. Livingstone Island, where he crawled to the edge of. And this is by Eastern Cataract view. Jumped in there, you'd be over the edge in a few seconds in the rainy season. And this is more like what it was when we were there. So this gives you a bit of a feel of the falls at different times. And the rainbow, God's promise of his covenant to animals and people after Noah's flood. Notice here, at the beginning of the rainy season, everything's very parched. It hasn't yet got to the greenery. So that... Now, our team members, Mike, Renee and Taryn, went from the customs across the bridge over on Sunday to see the Zimbabwe side, but we'll see those pictures later on. And the gorge, as it snakes its way through, is pretty impressive. So it's one of the most incredible sights in the world. Here you can see where the people bungee jump. They jump off this side, or they swing. They've got some of these swinging along sides. Okay, so you've got the feel. So we were going to be there on this bicentennial, the memorial service on the 16th of November 2013, this being the final Livingston bicentennial event of the year. So we built a made a real collector's item type of memorial service, order of service, and we gathered here where you could get a good view all the way through. Now, a missions conference event, if we had been in rainy season, we would have been drenched in so much spray, we wouldn't have been able to see much, let alone stay there long. We had the first person to open up the service as the one who traveled the furthest for it. Oke Chukwa came from Nigeria, and he's Church of England, and he did the opening reading from Psalm 67. We read and sang our way through. We started off with From Greenland's Icy Mountains, which is one of the greatest hymns of the Great Century of Missions, one of the favorite hymns of David Livingstone. More missionaries were inspired into the mission field during the 19th century through From Greenland's Icy Mountains than any other hymn. Written by Reginald Heber, Church of England bishop, who ended up in Ceylon's Isle. He sings about Ceylon's Isle, but he didn't know he'd end up working there, and he died in Ceylon's Isle, age 42. Christ Shall Have Dominion, another famous great hymn of the 19th century. And while we're there, I must say, I thought, this is hot. Unbelievably hot.
Yeah.
But what happened is, all the hot... normally, what the mist would be coming through here, the rocks were just sunbathed. This was like sauna steam coming off it. And we were at the end, and David and I, who were in suits, we were drenched in sweat. Not in mist. Which we would have had another time there. This is the pastor of the Presbyterian Church where we were staying, and Paul of the American Missionary are with us, and Michael, you'll recognize immediately. They've got the right kind of hats on. I would have liked to have worn a hat, but I didn't think that was appropriate for leading from the front. So we had a chance for testimonies, for greetings, for folks from different parts of Zambia and actually the world giving some testimonies, as we had both Zambians and Nigerian, American, South African speaking, Oke Chukwa, our Nigerian. Now, quite a few people are using umbrellas. You'll notice some still have the tags on them. I think David was buying umbrellas on the way through, because the new people are really going to be sweltering today. And there's no leaves on these trees to speak of, and there wasn't much shade if you didn't carry it along with you. So Michael gave testimony from the Africa Overland Mission and greetings from the other churches that he had travelled through all the way from Sudan down. And Terence said she felt pretty much like colonial sitting under her umbrella there, but that's just the right thing to do. Paul Hamrick did the New Testament reading. One of our two American representatives there, and Nigerian greetings as well. So this was covered by Radio MTV. We had two different TV groups coming there, and they were set up to cover every aspect. And this was an umbrella that the Watsons picked up at Ujiji. And here you can see Paul's wife, Anne Rachel, and she was lending her dookie there, I think. But there was a damp flannel on the head to cool one down. It is, It was so sweltering hot. It was like we were sitting in a sauna.
Yeah.
A really great time, a great event, an important event to mark at the most visually spectacular site, at the most historically significant date, the life and legacy of David Livingstone. We kind of felt sorry for those people who had missed out on it, because, yes, it's great to have your events in Scotland and Malawi, but Victoria Falls, that's the place to be. And so I think this was the right time, the right place. And we made an event, and we had people contacting us from all over Zambia saying how excited they were to see this on national TV. So we may not have had too many people at the event, but there was a lot of coverage. We couldn't have had much more coverage. You can see from the two different TV groups, and there were four mics in front of it, because one was from the radio station as well. Well, that was visually spectacular, but remember, if you were there in a rainy season, you wouldn't see a thing. You'd just be covered in mist and spray. So maybe it was just as well that we weren't there in the rainy season. Taryn showing that she has brought up in Port Pietermaritzburg, the last outpost of the British Empire. Doesn't it look colonial?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the message from this has been recorded. We've got it on sermonaudio.com as well. What would David Livingstone say to us today? And that's also in the shop, and we've put it on the Livingstone Chanted website as well. So we've filmed a lot. We've recorded audio. We'll be bringing out different aspects of this, and we trust that the message will go out all over Africa and the world of David Livingstone, what he stood for, and what we should be doing in our time to finish the fulfillment of the Great Commission. To think that we in Africa have the privilege of being able to follow in Livingstone's footsteps and drive where he walked and minister in countries where he sowed the seed. And he looked forward to that day. He looked forward to the day when there would be millions of Christians in these countries, and today that day has come. So, many of the people left us one of the reporters from Zambia National TV interviewed us later, the pastor from the Presbyterian Church, and I must say at the end of it we were absolutely soaked. I couldn't even get my tie off. It was so wedged shut from sweat that I really struggled to even get the tie pried off. It's been a long time since it's been that sweat soaked. And that's the memorial service brochure that we used. At the end of it, Joel, our Great Commission course graduate from Chipata, that's a very far eastern part of Zambia, closed off for the benediction. And then, notice how we're recording, this is the MP3 recorder's dangling at the end of that mic. So we've got all these mics here for the media, but also our own recording. So we got a group picture, and then somebody arrived just at that point from the mayor's office and ordered a councillor to give a message. So we had taken down a whole lot of things, we had gotten our group picture, but then we had to get some of the people gather again so we could get an opportunity for him to give the message from the mayor. And by then all these microphones had been taken away, and but he had a good message still. It was very honouring and respectful of David Livingstone, and the mayor's office had helped us get the permission to be there, and that's important, because when we tried to do Jesus form evangelism, we were blocked with the lack of police permission. If we didn't have the mayor's office permission for this, I don't know that we would have got the right to set up and just have a service. Now, while we were having the service here, Michael said he heard some foreigners walking past us saying, "Stupid, stupid, stupid people, stupid people, stupid people."
But the dialing tone was open to God.
Well, interesting, because which of them would walk past a Muslim service or Hindu service and say that? But because we've got a Christian service, and we're honouring the Lord, and these people, do they have any understanding of what's been accomplished in these countries by missionaries like David Livingstone? But anyway, that was interesting that I thought some of the tourists passing by might have joined us. But it seemed that they're more likely to have scorned. That's just some of the frontline team. More interviews. Quite a few of our people and participants were interviewed by Zambia National TV and Movie TV. And we praise God that these countries are wide open for the gospel and enthusiastic and presenting message of Livingston. Livingston is a name that's certainly honored and respected in Africa. Now, if you thought that human trafficking only works in schools, Taryn did it with the participants, which are mostly pastors and teachers and so on at our course. And of course, people just poured forward to sign up for this free course, all expenses paid, flight to America and so on. And so then she clapped the irons on them and said, "You've just been trafficked." Gave them the principles on how to traffic-proof people. So on Sunday, we had eight services, eight meetings. We got to six different churches. And Michael, you were in the Shekinah Glory Church, was it? And that, I think, is some of the Shekinah Glory, the decoration. I was at St. Andrew's Anglican Church, of course, processional and beautiful stained glass window. They said this was the first Anglican church in the country, and the Presbyterian church we were having service in was the first Presbyterian church in the country, they say. Some people might be interested to know that Livingston was the first capital of Northern Rhodesia. And Lusaka didn't exist. It wasn't a dot on the map. There wasn't a hut there until 1905 when the British chose it to be the railway junction. And Lusaka developed from there. So this is called St. Andrew's Anglican Church in honor of the patron saint of Scotland, St. Andrew's, from where David Livingstone came. So this is very much still a church that's built in memory of David Livingstone, his ministry. The reading of the Gospels, Reverend Emmanuel, the Anglican minister there, see David and Tessa in the congregation. And
are they holding something in front there?
They're holding the Bible.
Yes, for the reading of the Gospel.
Yeah.
They come to center, because there's the Old Testament reading, there's the New Testament reading, there's the Psalm reading, but when it comes to the Gospel, everyone stands, and they come and they gather around, and often in the center of the church, it'll be read in a almost sing-song type voice, and it's to show the authority of the Gospel. Mm-hmm. Notice the matches right there with the candle. He's organized, that shows preparation, because he realized that the candle might go out. He's going to start while there. So this is high Anglican, still using all the formulas, and beautifully built church. Obviously, very nice, a lot of work, and it's been quite well maintained. So I started off in Anglican church, but I had to be very hurried because I was also booked at the Baptist church, and the Baptist church wasn't just any kind of Baptist church. They were a Reformed Baptist church, and they weren't going to take just anyone. They wanted the full credentials and background before they would accept a guest speaker there. It was good to see a church that protected the pulpit and didn't let just anyone come. So, unfortunately, I was a little on the hasty side at the Anglican church and had to leave before the end of their service and join in Trinity Baptist, which they have been building since 2007 as church, as funds allow. That's where the Sunday school meets right now. And very good, thoroughly organized service. None of this emotionalistic extremism. Fine congregation, people from medical backgrounds, teachers, a good congregation. So over here, I had more time to develop on the whole message and again, literature distribution in Africa is easy. You come with a full box and you leave with an empty box. In fact, you don't need to pack anything up because whatever you take, it's gone. You've got to ration because whatever you put out will be distributed. It's just inevitable. You can see everything from World Missionary Press Gospel booklets, Will Animals Be in Heaven, Body Piercing, Christian Liberation Woman, Greatest, Chocolate Soldier, C.T. Studd's Great Message, Christian Action, and the people just love it all. So, wow. That was my second service of the day. But then, of course, there are other services taking place. Taryn was also having a youth meeting after one of the services at a Bagorka Bible Gospel Church in Ifkut Church youth group. And in the afternoon, Michael and Renee and Taryn went over onto the Zimbabwe side, walking, to see the far more imposing Livingston statue on the Zimbabwe side. Now, this one was set up back in the days of Southern Rhodesia. You can see our explorers, Devil's Cataract. Here you can see how it looks in the dry season. Still pretty substantial. Panoramic showing main falls and Cataract Island and the rainbow. And that is called the... Is it the Devil's Pool?
Yeah, the Devil's Pool.
Devil's Pool. You can swim in a little hollow right at the edge of the falls. Okay. Sounds like a great idea. Yes. This is just on the edge of Livingston Island. Yeah. So, but it's only possible in a dry season. In a rainy season. So you can see over here Livingston Island view. So there's Livingston Island. You can see the people. Some people are walking on Livingston Island. Others are swimming on the edge. So these pictures are taken by Rene, Mike. It's quite imposing to walk up to that and think. So that's where Livingston would have crawled to the edge of and dropped down as a weighted rope. That must have been quite something when you don't know what's on the other end and hearing this thundering roar. So this is taken Sunday afternoon, our team taking the one gap they had to do a bit of sightseeing between morning and evening services. And it would have been nice to get into Livingston Island, but you know, it's a long line, it's a payment, it's getting authorization. They're limited, don't they?
Yeah, I think
they try. Taryn did some investigation to that too. And all kinds of opportunities for rainbows and it's spectacular. This is a place we always get rainbows. Well, in the afternoon, I had David Livingston College of Education Chapel. Now, to show you a teacher's training college where you would think they'd know about spelling. Victory over Addis. Yeah, that's at a teacher training college. That's pretty serious. As you can see, yet another Livingston statue in Livingston and the David Livingston College of Education. It's a teacher training college where there they've got their memorial chapel, David Livingston Memorial Chapel, built in 1989. They're still building things in honor of David Livingston, and at the entrance to it, you can see this was dedicated to the glory of God, 1989, funded by the Church of Scotland Women's Guild. And the choir, so these are all teachers in training, and I put John up first, and I must say John just had a message from the Lord, and he is absolutely on target. He spoke about Jesus being very angry when the disciples pushed the children away and said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such a kingdom of heaven." And he said, "You, as a teacher, have a choice to either anger man or to anger God. If you will not present the truth about creation and the truth about God and when life begins and biblical principles for ethics and God's law, then you will face the wrath and indignation of our Lord Jesus Christ. And you either will please man or God. Are you going to serve the state or are you going to serve God?" As a teacher, the children's lives in hand. It is far more important what you do as a teacher. It was really good. I found it so easy to stand up and preach off that. John's a young man, but he's really got an ability. I've heard him on a number of occasions to preach unpopular, taking the sword and piercing right down. And these teachers are convicted. I mean, you could see there's a lot of anger and just rumbling. You could hear a couple of hundred voices at once, all complaining. He had struck a nerve. And you could see a whole lot of thinking, if I've got to choose between the states and God, I'm going to obey the states, you know. But was quite clear in many of their minds. But they can't say they weren't warned. So we had chapel. 2 hours of chapel on the Sunday afternoon, and then I had the next day a morning of lectures at the teacher training college as well, to speak on Livingston's legacy and history and heritage, as well as giving them presentations on biblical principles for education, which was really key. And these teachers, lecturers, were explaining the problems they had with the governments and the curriculum. We also dealt with Henry Morton Stanley. We taught the people lots of great hymns. And on the last day, Taryn was dealing at the school, giving an evangelism explosion presentation to the children, EE. And this is really a multi-ministry opportunity. And think, you know, radio, TV, the news media, getting into schools, the teacher training college, which is a huge teacher training college. 800 teachers at that college. And of course, the people at the Missions Conference. This is the man who traveled the furthest from Nigeria, Port Harcourt. And you see the libraries for pastors being entrusted. So every participant went away with some great material, which a lot of thought and prayer went into what they would need if they were teachers, pastors, chaplains, whatever their particular ministry was. And they were all well-equipped with different key books. So those who attended everything got the certificates, but those who got to the very end and who did well in different parts were, these folks got Reformation Study Bibles, and those are just spectacular resource. Taryn had this is a UN free zone, keep the United Nations out. Notice she's holding a little baby of 12 weeks model, and these are some of the great books that these pastors go away with. This is very precious and valuable. And every evangelist got lots of Bibles and books. So Frank had lovingly prepared and shipped up New Testaments and Bibles for Reuben and for Joel. And they would take, I don't know how they got these on the bus all the way back to Eastern Province, but they seemed confident they could do this.
You can see the goats
in the this is a long way to go. But you can see one of the family Bibles, that's going to be very popular in a pulpit. All over the world, there are statues to David Livingston. Of course, in the Royal Geographic Society, in Glasgow, in Blantyre. But the most famous ones are, of course, in Zambia. This statue was set up in 2005 on the 150th anniversary of David Livingston sighting and naming Victoria Falls. And you can see 16th November 2005. So we were there 16th November 2013. So they've been building monuments to Livingston until very recently, and they're still doing it. But just look for a moment. This is Rhodesia in 1955. This is Zambia in 2005. Notice the proportions and the style.
Economics.
This tells you something about culture and art. Here you've got statue in 2005 and a statue in 2005. On the occasion of the centenary of David Livingston's discovery of Victoria Falls, men and women of all races in and from all parts of the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland, what today is Malawi, assembled solemnly to dedicate themselves and their country to carry on the high Christian aims and ideals which inspired David Livingston in his mission here. I remember reading that in 1971, being quite impressed, and I was wondering, Christian aims and ideals, what's that mean? I mean, I have no idea. But notice, interesting, that the people involved in this included a nephew of David Livingston was involved in unveiling. But notice the manly, strong features in a 1955 statue of David Livingston. Compare it to the kind of floppy, out of proportion arms, legs, and so on. Notice? Is that not... That is 50 years difference in art. I mean, praise God, they're making statues to him now, but why are they not of the same quality? So, Scotland has brought out notes in honour of David Livingston. Rhodesia, in 1972... brought out 1973, that brought out a postage stamp in memory of the centenary of the death of David Livingstone. Malawi, on the 100th anniversary of his death, 1973, brought out postage stamps. Zambia brought out postage stamp on the anniversary of the death of David Livingstone, 1873, so the centenary in 1973, under Kenneth Kaunda, who even went up to Tumba's village to the monument. Now, this is a secular humanist who said he could not accept the severe faith of his parents, who believed in the depravity of man. He believed in the goodness of man. He was a humanist, not a Christian. His parents were trained in Livingstonia. His parents were dedicated Christians from Malawi. Kenneth Kaunda said he rejected that. But even Kenneth Kaunda had to honor David Livingstone. And under him, they brought out this stamp, which delightfully shows Livingstone chasing the Arab slave traders out, which is very nice. Even Djibouti, and David Livingstone never went anywhere near Djibouti. That's way up on the Red Sea. They brought out a memory stamp of David Livingstone. I've got a first edition copy of this. I picked it up at the airport. We went to the post office. It wasn't available in the post office, but I got it at the airport. This is quite valuable. I mean, this was actually $30, US dollars, to buy this. It's that's the bicentenary of the birth of David Livingstone. So that came out from the Zambian post office this year. Not easy to get hold of. But they're still building statues to him. They still bring up postage stamps in his memory. This is a missionary who was a Calvinist. He was post-millennial. He was victory vision orientated. He set the captives free. He believed in body, mind, and spirit. He believed in medical work, education, evangelism. And so what a joy and a privilege to minister in a place like this where they still honor the memory of David Livingstone. So it's an extraordinary experience for us to have been there. And the quotes of David Livingstone is, I beg to direct your attention to Africa. I know that in a few years I shall be cut off in that country, which is now open. Do not let it be shut again. I go back to Africa to try to make an open path for commerce and Christianity. It is for you to carry out the work that I've begun. I'll leave it with you. So, any questions or comments?
How did he die?
He had every kind of fever and black water fever. He was so sick. So he would have been early 60s, and he was found in an attitude of prayer. So he died about age 63. And his body was riddled with every kind of parasites and bilharzia. And he had ruined his life by
saving so many others.
Exactly. It was a rough terrain. The last few months of his life, he was so sick, he had to be carried by Susie and Truman for the last few weeks and months, because he could barely stand. But they found him kneeling in prayer early in the morning. Now, there's a confusion over, I've had some people questioning this, did he die on the 1st of May or on the 4th of May? Some people have seen a picture of the carving on the tree that was made by Susie and Truman, where it says, David Livingstone, heart buried here, 4 May 1873. And some people think they misunderstood the date, but I don't think so. I think it's they buried the heart on the 4th of May.
Mm-hmm.
But from his diary, it's saying he died on the 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no doubt he died on the 1st of May. But because of that picture, which carved on tree, it says 4 May. And so some people have gotten the dates wrong just on it. But that would have been the difference between death and burial of the heart.
Yeah.
You know, you October was always known as suicide month up in Rhodesia.
Yeah.
So you just missed suicide month. You would have been very hot there.
No, it felt like we were in suicide month.
Yeah.
If the rain hadn't come yet. If the rains had come a bit early, it would have been quite pleasant. But no, this was stifling. We were really... I mean, we were looking at that water thinking, oh, it'd be great to jump in there.
I wonder if Djibouti honoured him for the slave.
For ending slave trade, could have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's just extraordinary. David Livingstone must be, I think, he's the most honoured European name in Africa. But something else that's interesting, years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I did a reader survey of Christian Action magazine. Who's the greatest African of all time? Now, that was in response to some twits in the New African magazine who had voted Robert Mugabe the greatest African of all time. Well, I thought so. But the thing that was intriguing to me was, and I pointed it out and led at them, everyone they quoted in their top 10 were people who contemporaries of us who've lived in our time. You know, what about Cleopatra, Shaka? What about, you know, people, no perception of history, Tertullian, Augustine, Cyprian, Oregon, no understanding of the depths of African history. When you say the greatest Africans of all time, the only people who can come up with are people who've lived in the last 40 years? Mm-hmm. That's pathetic. It's like the Americans talking about the present generation, the ones who went through Second World War, as the greatest generation. I said, that's an insult, suggesting that your pioneers, your founding fathers, the people who went through the War of Independence, the people who opened up the West, that they weren't the greatest generation. Why this law? The last generation, the ones who legalized abortion, who legalized pornography, legalized homosexuality, who got the Bible out of schools, who got prayer out of schools, they're the greatest generation? You've got to be kidding. I said, I think they're your worst generation, which in America is just about heresy, the people falling on their backs in shock. But, you know, how is it that our time somehow has the best? That's nonsense. In history, when they write back, how many of our people right now are the greatest and the most wonderful and tremendous will even be remembered? But someone like David Livingstone shines. Well, when I did this reader survey, which fair enough went to readers of Christian Action magazine, that's not exactly representative of all of Africa, but far and away our reader survey voted David Livingstone man, the greatest African of all time. He was way ahead. There was no close second, really. By the way, you'd be interested to know from our readers, sorry to say Nelson Mandela made number 9, but Ian Smith made number 10. I'm trying to remember who was number 2. Shaka was in there. I think he was 5 or 6. But anyway, it was the most notable thing that David Livingstone was right up there. And that was votes that came from as far afield as Nigeria and Kenya. So in fact, I don't know if I could think of a better answer than that. Who has been a better friend of Africa? Who's done more for Africa than David Livingstone?
Yeah. It's not only that, he was a man who walked with God.
Mm. Yeah, you know? Definitely.
And when you look through history, you know, these men appear. These people, also there's been some women who have walked with God. You know, really, who you can say.
I know Mary Slessor was on our list.
Yeah. Mm. You know what I mean?
A lot of votes from Nigeria for Mary Slessor. Mother of all the people. In our entrance, you will see behind the glass display cases some of our Livingstone paraphernalia, which has grown significantly since his last visit to Zambia. We're just at the moment getting that first edition set of stamps framed, which will be up there soon. But we've accumulated quite a bit on them already. But we're, of course, putting on our website, and we're putting a lot of things on the Livingstone 200 website. And this has got links to all the museums I know of. A lot of his writings are online now too. Sometimes original correspondence as well. So the Livingstone 200 website has links to a major amount of resources. And we're putting a lot of pictures on that. We've looked on the World Wide Web and found there's a lot of things that aren't on that should be on. So we're trying to rectify that. Well, any other questions or comments? You know that our Frontline Fellowship website has been blocked in quite a lot of Muslim countries. Some friends of ours who work overseas as contractors in the Middle East, they say they can't access Frontline Fellowship web in Dubai and things like that, in Arab Emirates. So we've now got 14 websites going, and one of them is Livingstone Fellowship, because they don't know about that, and that's at least where sermons and lectures are and so on. There's also a backdoor that you can access some of the Frontline materials. Nobody's thought to ban Livingstone 200 yet. But, so that's why it's good to have different websites and Facebook pages. That they can't all get blocked.
It's called tolerance.
Exactly. Yeah, so those. And of course, the Facebook page. I put a lot of the pictures also on Dr. David Livingstone's Facebook page. So if you're on social media, link and like, and you'll find a lot of interesting things to be able to share with friends as well. So, any other comments, questions? Well, let me draw your attention to the fact that outside we've got Livingston House, dedicated to the glory of God. We named this mission house after David Livingston for good reason. He is to us our gold standard. Reformed, Bible believing, anti-Islam, pro-life, fighting to set the captives free, a man with a vision of victory. Well, he had such interest. Let me conclude with some of the great pictures of our lovely wildlife run. In Livingston's travels, he's got pictures of the smallest creatures. He's interested in everything from the insects and the bird life and the animals, and he's got it all there. And around Africa, imagine what it must have been like walking across Africa when there were herds of millions of springboks. And, I mean, this is why we name our top athletes springboks. They are just the best. And, you know, to see these magnificent animals close up, it's impressive. You know, you don't want to take these guys for granted. I've stepped on a flat dog by accident before, thinking they're a log. But notice this cooperation in nature. Here's the dental hygienist, and the dental hygienist knows that this crocodile's not going to close the jaw because what she's doing is important. You know? And you can see cooperation in nature in many different ways. Notice how the baboons work together as a team to cross the rivers. And here's the day spa treatment group picking off the ticks off the impala. And impala is very cooperative and happy. And, you know, they're getting nutrition. And it works well. You could, you know, going across Tanzania, they've got millions of these buck. And just imagine to have seen these scenes before man upset, polluted, and wrecked it. What a privilege it was for someone like David Livingston to go and, as he said, he's often had to drink water out of hippo hollows where there's. Isn't that great? And it's an interesting cooperation in nature. Can you imagine? And here, the story here is apparently this hippo was helping the buck, escorting the buck across the river to keep it safe from the crocs. There is amazing cooperation in nature where you do not expect it. Some extraordinary. Now, these are some of the toughest creatures out there. You do not want to mess with a buffalo, ever. I mean, imagine when there's herds of thousands of them. My nephew took this picture in Botswana at their farm being chased by some buffalo. Here is, you've heard of a zebra crossing. This is a wildebeest crossing. And, yep, the wildebeest. And our dear friends, the rhinos. Most graceful creatures. These Africa's got the tallest animals in the world. We've got the biggest animals in the world. We've got the fastest animals in the world. I mean, we've got the best animals in the world.
Evolution.
Yes. How did this work? How does this work out in evolution? They've got these catchment areas all the way along the long neck to prevent the blood flowing to the head and then passing out. Mm. And the first missionaries who came to Central Africa and they said there's snow at the equator. They lost their support. Because everyone in Europe said they've got to be lying. And before the invention of photography, these missionaries were absolutely dismissed as liars. Snow at the equator? Are you kidding? And, yep, no, they were. Imagine these gentle giants who can walk amongst all these animals and not trample them. But although you can see them crossing the river, sometimes using their snorkels to cross. Have you ever seen an elephant standing on his hind legs? Elephants are very affectionate.
There was a story about the Rhodesian Bush War with the troopies doing the patrols.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of stories that floated around that these guys bedded down at night. And when they woke up in the morning, they found the elephants had walked right through.
They're so gentle.
They never even heard it.
Now, you may not see the leopard, but the leopard can see you.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And these are the most stealthy, quiet, magnificent extraordinary animals. I had a leopard as a friend when I was growing up called Malcolm. He was absolutely great. But
no wonder cats like you.
You started with the really
I
big
like cats. Yeah. No, I mean cats are the best. And this is a leopard who had just been released. He's been let free from his cage. He'd been relocated away from a farm to a wildlife preserve. He's looking quite happy. Now look at the speed. Leaping up and getting these birds in flight. Look at that chap applying the brakes. I mean, that's fast. You think a crocodile's tough? Leopards and jaguars can take out crocs just like that. Those teeth are really like daggers. And here's just just magnificent photography of great animals. But Livingstone saw all of this, and he recorded a lot of it. And the details for God's creation is intense in missionary travels in the journals. And notice how they're just like cats, how they rise up and they cuddle and wrestle and play and fight. And they can see everything. Now, isn't that art? That's just incredible. And God is the original artist. Everything we do in art or science is just thinking God's thoughts after. He's the creator. We can only copy or adapt and imitate what God has already created. And, of course, the fastest animals in the world. These cheetahs, just built for speed. And, again, I'd like evolution to explain how all of this worked out. Right down to the black lines on the eyebrows, under the eyes, to prevent the sun reflecting so they can focus easier. And cats are always practicing the pounce and the wrestle and the fight, and they're very affectionate creatures. But when you see them running, they're the only animals who run 2 feet together, back and front, just extraordinary speed. And to see them running, they are in the air more than they're touching the ground. A cheetah, you watch in slow motion when out of cheetah outreach, phenomenally fast. And the way they change direction, they use their tail as something of a rudder. Mm-hmm. But look at that speed and that absolute, you know, efficiency, family unit. These are the teenagers. And the king.
Jesus.
Very unusual markings. But they got some out of cheetah outreach. Yeah. And, of course, the king. These are the top of the... entirely at the top of the food chain. But of all the cat species, the lions are the most gregarious, they're the most friendly, the most loving of all. And they live in communities and they like communities. And that's why if you accept it as part of a lion's pride, you are loved. It's the most amazing experience to be loved by a lion. And I loved my lioness Vivian. And my dad came home when I was 5 years old and brought me a lioness. That was just the greatest day ever. Spoils you for anything else because, you know, when you've got such a magnificent, powerful animal accepting as part of their pride. But just look at the vigilance. Look here, they're like Gideon soldiers. they are all alert. They're not just, you know, going ahead. They know what's going on. And the mother, totally alert to protect her young, crossing the river. Of course, danger of crocs and all that. There you can see, sort of the Lion King. That's a big tongue. And here you can see, you know, brothers, and this is a very ambitious little cub. You get the impression he's taking on a bit more than he can chew. Yeah, and this is going on expeditions. But again, when these, this is, you've probably seen this expression in your wife's eyes when they're shopping. Target acquired.
Oh,
yeah. And these are six brothers. You do not want to get an argument with them. So these are just some of the magnificent scenes of Africa, which we just praise God. We've got the privilege of enjoying and experiencing.
But you know, Peter, you've spent a lot of time in Africa, in the bush, like I have, and other people. But I've met people, I've met men, that have shared Africa like that, like we have, in the nature. Yet they don't get God. They don't get the creation. How do you account for that?
Spiritually deaf, dumb, blind. Yeah. I remember I sang a hymn every day at school. It didn't make one impact to me. It went straight over my head. And when I was 17 years old and I heard the gospel for the first time, and maybe somebody had said, but the first time I heard the gospel that I can recognize in Pines at the cinema, I walked into to see a film and I heard the gospel. I went forward and gave my life to the Lord. After that, I'd be singing a hymn which I'd sung who knows how many times that I knew off by heart. And it's suddenly for the first time, wow, incredible. So I understood what it is to be spiritually dead, to be spiritually alive, because the amount of times I've even come across people saying at college, does anyone know how to sing this hymn? I know how to sing a hymn, and I hadn't sung it since I was unsaved in Rhodesia at school in assembly, and I knew the hymn and I could lead the hymn, and it was like I sing it for the first time as well, because it's the first time I was recognizing the message. That's it. I think some people, if they don't have the spark of life from the creator, if they're not regenerate, how can they appreciate God's creation properly?
Well, you know, I had a friend, she got killed in a car crash in a head-on collision, and it shook me. This was back in the 80s. And I said, no, there must be something more to life. And I built myself a trailer, I hooked it up to my Mercedes, and I went to the Zambezi. And I sat in the bush there for, say, 3 months at a time. And I did that for about 15 trips over 18 years or 20 years. But I look back on it as a gift from God, because I realized that He held me in the palms of my hands while I was in the bush. I was safe. And I spent many days and hours by myself, kept by myself. If I had got bitten by a snake, I don't know how I would have got out of there. Yeah? But He looked after me, and He showed me, when you sit there and study ants, just ants going about their business, and they all have their job, and you put a stick in front of them. Oh, no. They go around it at first, and then they call the other guys, the soldiers or something, and they come and carry that stick out the way, and then the path is open again. You know, you just sit and study them. And it's just amazing at what you can see.
Yeah. And you just this poor Hammerick was telling me that up in Kabwe, now, I remember when I took my son Calvin up there, 2008, we saw a whole group of army ants marching.
Yeah.
Very impressive. He said just a few years ago, a drunkard fell asleep on the side of the road. He was half eaten by the morning. Army ants marched past, and they ate up half of this drunkard.
Yeah.
And just, if people think getting drunk and falling on the side of the road is acceptable.
No, you don't play with the wildlife, you respect it, and you live with it, you know, you don't go against it.
But I mean, think now, David Livingston spent 30 years of his life dedicated to Africa, but 26 years in Africa. Yeah. 26 years.
But he didn't even have another civilized person around him that he could share thoughts with or anything. And, you know, he just had these quarters and these...
It's an extraordinary thing.
For many of us, we
can go in the bush for a few weeks and we can feel, you know, it's time to get out. I don't think many of us have been in for more than a few months at a time. But
I used to be very comfortable. With you know, I used to take my own. I had a bucket. I used to hang up on a tree. Used to take a step ladder, so when I boiled the water, I could stand up the bucket, and I had a beautiful shower. I mean, he had nothing like that. Yeah?
Well, he might have adapted to something like a bucket, but that could have been about it.
Yeah. No, it's such a shame, because it's got spoiled over the last 6 or 7 years. Like you say, the border crossing, the taxes, the payment, the ripping off.
I count myself very privileged to have brought up in old world, to have experienced the old Rhodesian to see the transition as traumatic, but to have experienced it. Some of you know Kenya and how it used to be, and it's just extraordinary. My father knew the old Northern Rhodesia when it was a paradise. When Cairo Road and Lusaka was the neatest, cleanest place you could imagine, when Livingstone was pristine, there wasn't a bit of litter or everything, just beautiful, luxurious plant. You could walk in a shade down almost all the streets in Livingstone because there were trees on both sides. It's hard to imagine back to that stage, but some of us saw it.
All the little stones around the police station or the post office were all whitewashed.
Well, it was a privilege to be there. I'm counted it a wonderful dream for Phil to be able to be there at this particular time. We're sorry that a lot of other people missed out on it, but we were there, and I'm glad we can share some of it. And the point is to look back and also to remind the people of Zambia where they've come from. For many of the people didn't seem to appreciate much of the depth, did they? I mean, many seem to be surprised by the facts in Livingstone's life and so on.
But that's what's wrong. History is not taught as it should be. Quite right.
Well, I mean, I had somebody even asking me to teach training course, well, why are you just giving us this history of Livingstone? Why not giving the history of our people? And he said, discriminating just because he wrote down history and our people, many of them didn't have, didn't use writing. I said, well, Livingstone brought written language and books and the Bible to you, so of course he didn't have written history before. And that's the problem when you've got an oral culture. You don't remember back more than two or three generations. Because how can you? You've got to have written. So you can't blame the person who brought reading and writing to you for the fact that the people before didn't have it. That's the fruit of animism, witchcraft. But the gospel brought a fruit of freedom and knowledge which was never there before. And Livingstone brought technology that trebled people's life expectancy. Now, you can't blame the one who brought the medicine and brought the gospel for what the people didn't have before. But, of course, they're trying to angle it in some places that sum up all the missionary's fault. But still, we laid seeds, and I think that all the people came, they got data discs, they got manuals, they got literature, they got materials, and I think a lot of this information will be taught far and wide and have an impact. And I think it'll refresh and revive and enthuse people in Zambia and other parts of Africa when they can get back to their roots and back to their historical foundations.
That youth up there is the same as the youth anywhere. They know something's not right.
Yeah. And I think the Zambians are more teachable and open than most.
Yeah.
Certainly easier than the South African youth to talk to.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. They know there's something in us.
Well, let's pray. I do have the notes of the Sunday message on Challenges of Livingstone today on the table. We've got the Great Commission course coming up too, so we've got some leaflets out on that. And if anyone didn't get Joy magazines and jokes from last week, I'm sure I can find some around here just now. Any other point before we close in prayer? There are a few back copies in, but of the December ones. Michael, would you be kind enough to close us in prayer, please?
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for your servant, Dr. David Livingstone. Thank you, Lord, for his obedience in coming out as a missionary to Africa. Lord, thank you for the difference and the change, the benefits which we enjoy today, which many Africans enjoy today because of his service seeking to extend your kingdom. Well, thank you for this presentation. Thank you that Frontline Fellowship had the privilege to conduct this memorial commemorative service on the banks of the Zambezi, remembering David Livingstone and lifting him up as one of your servants. Lord, we just pray that many people might see his work for what it is, and may his work continue to draw people to you. And we just ask, Lord, that as we go our different ways tonight, Lord, that you would please go with us and draw us closer to you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.